ho, Merry Christmas, Worst Foot Forward listeners. You join us for your festive dose of The Third Foot, where we go back and look at a past episode, a past winner, or a specific topic that we want to delve down a little bit deeper. And Ben is the little boy bouncing up and down in my lap, looking excitedly into my eyes, wondering what I've got in my sack for him this week.
I mean, that's a creepy intro.
That's all. You're putting all of that on it. I'm just being Santa.
Now
reach into this. No, we decided that we'd have a look at some Christmas traditions.
Yes.
This month seems an appropriate thing for us to do. A couple of years ago, we did The World's Worst Santa. And so we talked about quite a lot of Christmas traditions then. But it seems that just another dive on the internet produces even more weird and wonderful things from around
the world. Good, that's good to know. I'm glad that the internet can sometimes be a trusty old stallion like
that.
It's
a bottomless pit.
It is also that.
So the first thing I read about is the skating mass.
Okay, that is skating. What is that?
It's a mask people skate to. Next fact. No, in Venezuela, apparently in Caracas, yearly, there's a tradition that many people will make their way to mass on Christmas morning on roller skates. Apparently it's so well established at this point, no one quite knows where it came about or why it started.
Sorry, in my head, when you said skating mass, I presumed that it was ice skating, and then when I realised it's Venezuela, that is unlikely.
Yes, apparently, well, that's one of the suggestions, maybe because people, the Europeans have a tradition of tobogganing around winter times, that obviously the conditions in Venezuela are less conducive to such things, so to suggest the roller skate became the alternative.
I just got reminded of, I've just started listening to Adam Buxton interview with Billy Connolly, He says his favourite word in the world is toboggan.
That's quite a good one. Yeah. Apparently they close a lot of the city streets to traffic from 8 o'clock in the morning on Christmas morning, so that the skaters can get to church safely. Some children would sleep with one lace of their skates tied around their toe and the other skate dangling out the window so their friends could tug on it to wake them up in the morning.
Obviously, Avril Lavigne's Skate the Boy is a devotional song in Venezuela.
Apparently, children get to bed a bit earlier than usual so they'll have enough strength for the next day. And then at the end of Mass, people go out and eat tostados and drink coffee.
Oh, great.
Sounds lovely. We may have talked about this before. Do you know what a traditional Ukrainian Christmas tree decoration is?
Oh, is it like the head of a dead pig?
No, no, and it's not a vice president's son either. No, apparently they have a tradition where they have Christmas decorations which look like spider's webs shimmering with dew.
Oh.
Which sounds very, very pretty. Apparently it goes back to a folktale about a poor widow who couldn't afford to decorate her Christmas tree for her children, and so the spiders in the house took pity on her and spun beautiful webs all over the tree to decorate it for, which the children woke up to see on Christmas Day. And apparently spider's webs are considered lucky in Ukrainian culture as well. You shouldn't break them. My husband, not a fan of spiders, so they will not be gracing our Christmas tree. And on weird Christmas decorations, I saw one of these in John Lewis. We went to buy Christmas decorations last week, and I was perplexed by why they had pickles. They had little baubles that were just gherkins.
Is it Pickle Rick?
No, it's not Pickle Rick from Rick and Morty. It's just, it's a pickle, a gherkin. This comes from, apparently this is a traditional thing in Germany. The Christmas pickle is a German tradition as well. In quite, small areas of Germany. It's not very widespread, so some people aren't entirely sure why it happened, but apparently it came from there's something similar at Passover that the Jewish people do with a matzah. They hide the pickle in the tree, and the child who finds the pickle gets to a present, or they get to open their presents first, or whatever. What's that? You hide a matzah at Passover?
Yeah, you do. Well, the night before Passover, you hide 10 bits of bread around the household, and you go chasing after them. Not chasing after them, they're static. You go hunting after them. With a goose feather and a candle to scrape them up. And then, during the Seder, you break up a bit of matzah. And either it is hidden by the parent and the child has to find it for a prize, or the way my family does it is that my dad goes out of the room for a bit, I find the matzah, hide it, and then ransom it to him in exchange for my inheritance.
Strong work. Apparently some German settlers brought this idea over to the US, so it's that tradition still carries on over there, even if the meaning and the game element of it has been lost somewhat. Mm. Obviously, wooden pickles nowadays rather than actual pickles.
Yeah.
The greenness of it is good because it's sort of invisible in the tree.
Oh, of course.
That's why they chose the pickle. In Norway, apparently on Christmas Eve, it's a tradition for some people to hide their brooms. Do you want to guess why?
So witches don't steal them?
Yeah.
Love it.
It's because they sort of feel like the lines between the mystical world and the earth are blurred on Christmas Eve. It's one of those
It's a bit like Halloween, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those sort of liminal days of the year. And so they believe evil spirits can come loose and invade your houses and the witches will steal your brooms and ride in them. So apparently there are still lots of people who hide their brooms in Norway to protect them from being stolen. I read a bit more about Christmas trees and how that tradition came about. Before Christianity, people would use evergreen boughs to decorate their homes during winter. It was just a thing that happened because the greenery would remind them of spring would come and greenery would return. And so obviously when Christianity arrived, it went, we'll borrow that tradition, thank you, we'll do something with that. And so they absorbed that and they would decorate evergreen trees with apples to represent the Garden of Eden, because they'd be like the tree of knowledge. And they would call them paradise trees around the time of Adam and Eve's name day, which is December 24th, by various byroads, translated into the Christmas
tree, Eve is Adam and Eve's name day.
Yeah,
because that's the day that Eve was named after.
Yes, of course. And Adam's full name is Adam Christmas, presumably. Right.
Yeah. It's a great buddy movie.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently, obviously, I think a lot of people know that Queen Victoria and Prince Albert popularised it because Victoria decided they would have a Christmas tree in the palace as a nod to her husband's German heritage, and became the fashionable thing because people are like, if the Queen and the King and Queen are doing it, then we should be doing it.
Yeah, and then of course baubles are put on there in homage to Prince Albert's genital piercing.
Yeah, yeah, almost certainly. German members of the royal family had apparently previously had Christmas trees, but they didn't catch on until the big two did it. And it wasn't just it caught on really worldwide thanks to her. By 1900, 1 in 5 American families had a Christmas tree. So obviously Queen Victoria was a worldwide trendsetter. She was very much the Kylie Jenner of her day.
She's an influencer.
Yeah, big time.
She's a phonograph influencer.
She wouldn't have had to come up with an evergreen tree, though, in New Zealand, though. Apparently there is a New Zealand Christmas tree, which is the Pohutukawa tree, or Metrosideros excelsa, for people who like the Latin name. It's a tree with a crimson flower that is iconic in New Zealand, apparently. It features on greeting cards and in poems and songs, and is a really important symbol for Kiwis at home and overseas. In 1833, the missionary Henry Williams described holding a service under a wide-spreading Pohutukawa, and the first known reference to it as a Christmas tree is from 1857, when flowers of the scarlet Pohutukawa, or Christmas tree, formed part of table decorations at a feast put on by the Ngāpuhi leader Eruera Patuone. And then apparently 7 years later, an Austrian geologist called Ferdinand von Hochstetter noticed that settlers started referring to it as the Christmas tree. And he observed it, he said, about Christmas, they're full of charming blossoms. Obviously, the seasons are switched north and southern hemispheres, so they're in full bloom at that time of year. And the settler, he said, decorates his church and dwellings with its lovely branches. Other 19th century sources call it the settler's Christmas tree or Antipodean holly. And in 1941, an army chaplain called Ted Forsman actually composed a carol about it where he references, "Your red tufts are snow." So it's really pretty. If you want to Google it, it's really, really nice to look at. And they have a wider significance beyond Christmas. There's a very gnarled old Pohutukawa tree on a cliff at Cape Reinga, which is at the northern tip of New Zealand, which for the Maori, this is known as the place of leaping. It's the place that the spirits of the dead begin their journey to the traditional homeland of Hawaiki. So they'd leave New Zealand from this northern point by jumping off the cliff and sailing away. They'd leap and climb down the roots of this tree, which is 800 years old. It's still there, and descend into the underworld. It's really cool. It's just like, it's one little lone tree on the side of a cliff.
Wow, where hopefully in the underworld there are presents.
Yeah, you don't say. Yeah, very much so. We talked about the Krampus in that episode about Santa.
No, Krampus.
Krampus. And our old friend the Yulupuki, or Christmas goat, or Santa goat, or a goat in red hot pants, for people who haven't listened to that episode.
I've just thought, So Norwich City's current star striker is called Timo Pukki.
He is.
His name must be Tim Goat.
Almost certainly, and he's going to be a guest on the show. In this there's lots of these figures who are sort of alternate Santa figures in different cultures around the world. And I quite like the Italian one, Befana. It's an old woman who delivers gifts to children on Epiphany Eve, so the night before Epiphany, so January the 5th. Right. In the same way to Saint Nicholas or Santa Claus.
Obviously, people went like, when should you deliver your present? You was like, I don't know. Oh, I've got an idea.
So apparently the thought is that maybe her name actually comes from the Italian for the Feast of the Epiphany, which is Festa dell'Epifania, and her name is Befana. But in folklore, she visits children in Italy on the eve of the Epiphany, fills their socks with candy and presents if they're good, or a lump of coal or dark candy if you're bad. And apparently the tradition is all children should expect to find at least one lump of coal, because all children have been bad at some point during the year.
Torn. Like, on the one side, that is a good lesson about the harshness of reality for children. On the other side, that is sort of getting guilt into them early.
Yeah. Apparently the coal they use is usually a rock candy made black with caramel colouring.
Well, that's not a good lesson either.
Yeah, because, like, you've been bad, have a sweet. In a lot of the poorer parts of Italy, they'd use a stick rather than coal, because coal is quite precious to keep people warm. And she's also apparently a good housekeeper, so she would apparently sweep the floor before she left as well. Apparently they sort of view the sweeping as sweeping away the problems of the past year. And children, again, like with Santa, you'd leave out a glass of something, a glass of wine and a plate of food or something for the Befana. And she appears as sort of a witch figure, as a hag riding a broomstick with a saw and soot, because she comes down the chimney and so on. But she's usually smiling and carrying baskets of sweets and stuff. But I like this. In Toronto, Canada, a Befana choir shows up on winter solstice every December to sing in the Kensington Market's Festival of Lights parade. So apparently there's an Italian community in Toronto, and men, women and children dress like the Befana and sing love songs to serenade the sun, to beckon it to return at the time of the solstice. The singing hags, and I'm quoting here,
The
singing hags, yes, gather in the street to give candy to children, to cackle and screech to accordion music, and to sing in every key imaginable, as delighted parade participants join in the cacophony. I don't know how delighted you'd be to have a choir of people deliberately singing out of tune. Have you seen the film A Christmas Story?
Someone was talking to me about this the other day, and yeah. I've not, no.
I was not aware that this is a tradition in America. So it's a film from, I think, the mid-1980s, about 1985 or so, about a kid called Ralphie who wants a Red Ryder BB gun, and it's about his parents telling him he can't get it, and then eventually they go to a shop and meet Santa. It's very, like, it's like a knockoff Miracle on 34th Street sort of vibe. And apparently, since 1997, a 24-hour marathon of A Christmas Story has run on TV in America. TBS in the USA broadcasts the film 12 times in a row from Christmas Eve through Christmas Day. That's 22 years they've been doing this. And apparently it's one of the most popular holiday programs. Regularly reaches more than 40 million viewers across TBS and its sister channel TNT. We all have films that we tend to watch at Christmas. Muppets Christmas Carol, Die Hard, Home Alone, whatever. The idea of a channel dedicating itself to one movie on a loop for the entirety of Christmas.
Yeah, no. I can imagine wanting that for certain Christmas movies, being able to sort of look at it, you know, check in and be like, he's in the air conditioning system now. Yeah. the shoes are off and the feet are bleeding.
Yeah.
Oh no, Mr. Nakatomi's dead.
Do you, Mr. Takagi?
Takagi, yeah. It's the Nakatomi Plaza, Mr. Takagi.
I'm afraid Mr. Takagi will not be joining us for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
I will count to three, Mr. Takagi. There will not be a four. Her. Is Die Hard your go-to Christmas movie then?
No, it's Muppets Christmas Carol.
Yeah, every time.
Obviously.
Yeah. That's my husband's and my plan for Christmas Day. We're going to eat dinner, go for a walk, and then just eat lots of chocolate and watch the Muppets Christmas Carol. Yeah. Maybe a bit of Home Alone if we've got a bit of time.
I'm trying to think if there's any other Christmas... Hook feel... It's not Hook. Christmas...
Yeah, but it's a Christmas,
feels Christmassy.
Though, isn't it? They go to visit Wendy at Christmas, don't they?
Oh, do they? Okay, yeah. That counts as a Christmas movie.
Yeah, absolutely does. If Die Hard's a Christmas movie, then that definitely is.
Die Hard is absolutely a Christmas movie, and it is a hill that I'm willing to not just die on, but fight East German terrorists on.
Yeah, on RT, it always seemed like they were repeating The Wizard of Oz at Christmas when I was growing up.
Hmm.
Like, it's not specifically a Christmas movie, but in my head I associated with Christmas because it was... There'd just be movies on for days in and around Christmas. Apparently in The Christmas Story, Ralphie 28 times says he wants this Red Ryder BB gun. Just goes bangs on about it. That's once every 3 minutes and 20 seconds, apparently. And in this film, it has that thing where you get your tongue stuck to a piece of cold metal.
Oh yeah, is that the first time it appears?
It may well be. And Mythbusters tested this idea to see if it was possible. And guess what? It really is. You can genuinely get your tongue frozen to a piece of cold metal.
I can believe that.
The kid who does it is called Flick in the film, and he's played by an actor called Scott Schwartz. For several years after, he worked in the adult film industry. you know.
What else does he get his tongue stuck to?
A frozen stick. I went to Japan because we always do on this show, and they have a fun Christmas tradition. Only 1% of the Japanese population is Christian, so it's not a major holiday. In 1974, a group of foreigners in Japan couldn't find turkey on Christmas Day, and they opted for some fried chicken, apparently, at KFC, and KFC saw a prime opportunity,
mm-hmm.
and they launched its first Christmas meal. That year, in 1974, they had chicken and wine for $10, roughly, which is pretty pricey for the mid-70s. And since then, it has been a tradition that on Christmas Day, you get KFC in Japan. They ran a campaign...
Like chicken KFC or Christmas...
Like KFC, yeah, like the bucket of chicken thing. They ran with a slogan in 1974, Kurusumasu niwa Kentucky... which means Kentucky for Christmas. And it spawned this tradition. And still today, you can get... this is from an article a couple of years ago, but apparently you can still get the Christmas chicken dinner, which includes cake and champagne, which it's about $40 now. And families from all over the country go to their local KFC, apparently, to get a meal there. Apparently, it's the busiest day of the year for KFC in Japan. Back office staff, presidents and execs come out to help move the lines along. And they become synonymous with Christmas. Fried chicken and Christmas is just... They go hand in hand in the advertising. KFC's advertisements use big pop culture figures eating their drumsticks. And the company website has a countdown until Christmas in Japan. Apparently, they've also launched a campaign in recent years. From the 1st of December through February 28th in 1 year, passengers on selected flights between Tokyo and 8 US and European cities could enjoy KFC in flight for the Christmas season as well.
I found out a good old tradition with turkey. So back in, well, at least pre-industrial, if not, you know, medieval times, used to be a tradition to march turkeys from Norfolk, where a lot of them were farmed, to London.
Oh, yes, and they'd put boots on them.
Yes, but it wasn't actual boots. It was they would dip them in tar, then sand.
Oh.
The feet, not the whole turkey. That would affect the edibility.
That's mad. Have you heard of the Late Late Toy Show? Oh, Ben. As an Irishman, I have to tell you about the Late Late Toy Show.
Please do.
This began in 1975. The Late Late Toy Show is a cultural institution in Ireland. It is pretty much always the most watched programme of the year on Irish television.
Is this analogue Toy Story?
No. So the Late Late Show is one of the world's longest running chat shows. It's been running since the early 60s. Famously, Gay Byrne presented it, who died this year. He presented for about 37 years. And it's a mix of light entertainment interviews. They'll have performances by musicians and stuff. They'll have human interest stories. Politicians will come on and be grilled. It's a bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's not... This is just light entertainment. And they're able to jump from, you know, interviewing a celeb about their new book to talking to a woman who has survived a major disease or something like that. And they'll host, like, they'll have phone-in competitions, and it's all live. But, like, it's 2 and a bit hours of live broadcast every Friday. Every year, at the end of November, early December, to coincide with coming up to Christmas, they hold the Late Late Toy Show, where they showcase the toys of the year, presented by the host, but the toys are demonstrated by children. So they have children as guests talking about whatever the new computer games are, and kids cycling through on the new bikes and ride on tractors, and a kid demonstrating reading the books that they want and looking at dolls. And they'll have kids who are very young, into their early teens. They'll have musical guests will appear as well. A lot of times they'll have celebrities will come on and surprise a kid who's a big fan of them, like Rory McIlroy or Robbie Keane or Girls Aloud will come out behind a kid who's just talked about how they're a big fan of them. It's adorable.
Surely the kid's got to know that's coming.
They're children. They're only 6 or 7. They've never seen this show before. They don't have the history to know that that's what's coming. It's like the most heartwarming thing. And like, it's live TV, it's a studio with children, lots of toys in it, hyped up adults in the audience, because the tickets to this are like fucking gold dust. And so it's always shambolic but brilliant, and it's really prime real estate for the advertisers. Commercial airtime during the Late Late Toy Show in 2009, a 30 second spot cost €17,000. A 30 second spot during the UEFA Champions League final 6 months later cost €9,750.
Wow.
Yeah, so nearly double the price. Tickets to the taping are, like I said, they're like gold dust. 1 year, a ticket was auctioned for €1,500. In 2008, a woman won 2 tickets to the show and a €10,000 shopping spree on the live phone-in competition on the show. And she was very slow to respond to the host, Pat Kenny's sort of questions. Are you excited? What are you going to do with the money? You've won the tickets. And she said, oh, I'm not particularly interested. The audience, like, audibly gasped in the room. And Pat Kenny was, like, stunned, hilarious, overblown fury, ripped the tickets up live on air. It's like a very famous moment on Irish TV. They often have musical performances on that show by like school choirs or young kids from stage schools and stuff. There's one of my favourite bits every year is they show toddlers who've come into the studio earlier in the day to play with the toys. So they'll invite in like toddlers or children with disabilities or children who maybe don't enjoy a really hyped up atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And they record that, and they show a little sequence of like how the kids were like just playing in this Christmas wonderland full of toys.
Yes, please.
Yeah, there's Christmas jumpers. This year, as I said, they usually spring guests on people, and they did. Shane Lowry met a little girl who's a big fan of his as a golfer, but they also had like a real focus on family stuff this year. One kid, his sister flew back from Australia and he hadn't seen her for 2 or 3 years, and she came out into the studio behind him and there was a big like family reunion, and another kid was talking about how he loves his granny, and they just had his granny come on as like a special guest to give him a hug on TV. And my favourite thing about it, as I say, it's the most watched programme on Irish TV this year. 1.7 million people tuned in to watch it. The population of Ireland is about 4 million.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
That's proper, like, old school broadcasting as well, yeah. When a third of the nation tunes in.
Oh, no. The average live audience was 1.35 million at any one time. 76% of the audience watching television in Ireland at the time were watching the show. And it was also watched in over 100 countries outside of Ireland because RTE live stream it without geo-blocking because of people like me who don't live at home anymore.
I mean, and it's on Christmas Day, you say?
No, it's they often repeat it on Christmas Day, but it's usually broadcast. It was on last week or a couple of weeks ago. It's usually in early December.
Great. I know what I'm doing tonight after my gig because the world is a sad, dark, awful place.
And next year, let's get together and watch it.
Oh, yes, please.
We'll do a live stream and watch that.
Yeah.
In fact, why don't we do a Worst Foot Forward does the Late Late Show live stream.
What, where we bring
we piggyback onto a major Irish
it's a great idea
again.
We'll invite some orphans along to play with some toys that didn't pass their health and safety and then film what happens.
I've got one last story for you, and this has come from Sweden. Every Christmas, families in Sweden gather around television at 3 o'clock to watch a TV program known in Swedish as Kalle Anka och Hans Vanner Onskar Godjul,
bless you,
or as it's known, Donald Duck and his friends wish you a Merry Christmas. It's known as Kalle Anka for short. And apparently, on Christmas Day, a bit like the Queen's speech perhaps, television, your day is planned around this TV special. More than 40% of Sweden's population still tunes in to watch this, about, I think it's about 45 minutes to an hour's worth of cartoons from Disney. Which they date back to the 1960s when televisions were new in Sweden. There was only 2 channels, one of which was playing these Disney cartoons at Christmas. So the first year it happened, apparently in 1959, it's been airing since then without commercials at the same time on Sweden's main TV channel, TV1, on Christmas Eve. And it consists of Jiminy Cricket presenting about a dozen Disney little cartoons from the 30s, 40s, 50s and 60s. Only a couple of which have anything to do with Christmas. One of which still has a gollywog doll in it.
Yeah.
And they'll often have, in the new version, they'll often present an extract from a more recent Disney film, whether it's Frozen or whatever is out at the moment. And there'll be clips from films like Cinderella and Snow White and The Jungle Book. And it's pretty much the same every year. Like, this, it's almost, without exception, it's the same thing apart. They have a live introduction by a host who kind of plays the role of Walt Disney, because Walt was on the original Walt Disney Presents series, which this is from. They, and the addition of the latest Disney movie clip is contractually obligated by Disney, of course, on the Swedish channel. The show's second short is a 1944 cartoon called Clown of the Jungle, which Donald Duck is in, where the show gets, he's Kalle Anka in Swedish, and he's tormented by a Araucan bird during an ornithological expedition. It's just loads of random violence. It's not terribly Christmassy. The bird sprays Donald Duck with seltzer, bashes his head with a mallet, blows him up with an exploding cigar, threatens to kill him simultaneously by hanging and gunshot, and eventually drives Kalle Anka insane.
Well, it's Christmas if Herod had succeeded.
Yeah, it's kind of embodying how frustrated people get with trying to cook the perfect turkey as a bird tormenting you. In Sweden, apparently, this is typically one of the three most popular television events of the year. As I say, between 40% and 50% of the country tune in to watch it. In 2008, it had its lowest ratings in 15 years, but it was still watched by 3.2 million people. And lines of dialogue are apparently commonplace from the cartoon. I've entered sort of Swedish vernacular. Stockholm's Nordic Museum has a display in honour of the show at an exhibit titled Traditions. And any time the network has attempted to cancel or alter the show, there's been a massive public backlash.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the one year they tried to remove Ferdinand the Bull, a little cartoon about him, from it. And people were like, no, put it back in. Arne Weiss, who's hosted the show live from 1972 to 2002... basically was like the personification of Christmas. And so in the early 90s, he tried to get the network to record his portion rather than having to do it live on Christmas so he could spend it with his family. Newspapers leaked the story and helped scuttle his chances of getting out of it. Apparently, the president of the channel said, "We had recorded everything, but no way. The host was supposed to sit there in some sort of vigil over Christmas. There was such a public outcry, like, no, he has to do it live. He has to do it live." Arne Weisse, claimed that their insistence he recorded live every year destroyed his personal life, and he blamed the show for his 3 divorces.
Oh no!
He may have been joking. He says, "I wasn't easy to live with. I was in a bad mood out of nervousness before going out on air, and tired afterwards. That doesn't help to make you a good father or lover," he told a newspaper in 2007. And during his final taping of the show in 2002... Arne Weisse had a history of alcoholism and stuff like that, which people were aware of. He claimed to have been as high as a kite on the morphine pills he was taking for his psoriasis.
Morphine pills for psoriasis? That seems like an overreaction.
It really does. My favourite thing about it is that I also, in reading about this, learned some of the Swedish names for various Disney characters. Kalle Anka, as I said, is Donald Duck. Chip and Dale are known as Piff Ock Puff.
Yeah.
Moose Pig is Mickey Mouse. And Long Ben is Goofy.
So, okay. Long Ben.
Long Ben.
Oh, Long Ben, that's my porn name.
So wherever you are around the world, whether you're settling down to watch the rerun of The Toy Show or cuddling up with your Swedish relatives to watch Kalle Anka or looking for pickles in your Christmas tree, we wish you a very happy Christmas from Worstwood Forward, and I hope you'll join us in the new year for more of this, including our first live show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, also, we did this a couple of years ago, and it was great fun. If you choose to listen to this over Christmas, take a wee photo of what you're doing on either Christmas Day or Boxing Day as you listen to this. There was one brilliantly memorable photo of a farmer mucking out the cows.
Yes.
listening to us, which just delighted us. So, yeah, do take a cheeky little selfie and then tag it in on @WorstFoot on Twitter.
Or if you're not on Twitter but you have Facebook, you can always send it to our Facebook page as well if you look up Worstfoot Forward.
Yes, you can. So, yeah, Merry Yuletide, Merry Hanukkah, Merry Winterval, Merry Saturnalia. May the winter gods resurrect you anew into the new decade, and may Vishnu shine down on you with his munificence.
Thank you for listening to Worstfoot Forward. Bye
bye.